Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. Could just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's hear it for the man, the myth, the legend, the 100% spite-free, hopefully, super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Die of spite.
No, I got spite at both of y'all. You guys were singing before we started this, and you didn't invite me into it. I didn't know what you were singing, because it was probably before my time, but yeah.
Oh, now you're calling us old?
Wow.
Is that what you're doing here?
This is what happens when you get me spiteful.
First of all, you don't need to be invited to sing, Max. That's not how singing works.
You just have a song in your heart.
Yes, please. Yes, for the love of
God. I'm going to find the point that's equidistant between your two places of residence. I'm going to build a giant, ugly wall just to spite you two.
Well, I don't leave the house, so it won't affect me.
Would you say that we left you with some feathers in your hand? Does it make it any easier to leave you where you stand?
Oh, boy, Ben, now I got to complete the whole thing. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be. I will not be an enemy of anything. I only stand here waiting for us to start the show. Big ups to Counting Crows. By the way, they get a bad rap. First of all, because Adam Duritz and his white boy dreads. But also, you know, the Shrekification of so many artists, I think, was unfortunate. And I think the Counting Crows fell victim to that.
Such a good writer, though.
I agree.
He's such a good writer. And especially we're talking their first two albums, you know, they're very much of the time.
There's
some beauty to it.
The song we're talking about, the Angels of the Silence, is off of their second album, I believe, which is called Something About Satellites. But I played it for my kid, and they loved it. It was just like, you know, this is emo. This sounds like I'm like, you know, some of the like My Chemical Romance or something like that. And it occurred to me that they did have a sort of a proto emo kind of vibe on that record. It doesn't sound like their other stuff, but check them out. Don't write them off.
There's a reason that people enjoy it. So it's Recovering the Satellites. That's the one we're trying to think
That's
of. Recovering the Satellites from like 1996.
That's right.
God, that was a long
good
time
record.
Ago. Good record. And with this, we want to continue our record of examining spiteful architecture. You're Noel. I'm Ben. Max, hopefully you're still Max. Okay. I saw that Max did a deuce on that one. Nice. In our previous episode earlier this week, we explored two very spiteful structures, one called the Skinny House and one that's a very strange story about Macy's that ropes in Sunglass Hut at the very end.
Jasonly. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Where are we going today, though?
God, where aren't we going today? Actually, we're it's a pretty limited place. We're going to a couple of places. Today, we are traveling to the San Francisco Bay Area, you know, to keep to stay with the music theme. It's, you know, when the sun shines on the bay, when the lights go out in the city, and the sun, that's the titular bay of Journey fame, the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay. Beautiful. Beautiful place, if not a little bit over gentrified at this point, and swarming with startup bro types. But still,
no way.
Lovely stuff. And if you go to certain parts of the city, it's exactly. If you go to certain parts of the city, there are things that haven't been, you know, overtaken by this culture. You can find places that have been grandfathered in, or like family businesses that have existed there for so long, but it's become one of these places that's just so prohibitively expensive to live or set up a business that it's almost starting to feel like it's losing its culture, if I may be so bold.
Yeah, and this is a cyclical thing we see with a lot of cities and a lot of communities when they become financially successful. You see it often with more artistic and bohemian areas. Little Five Points in Atlanta, Georgia, Montmartre in Paris, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these are these little enclaves that do usually have some governing body that tries at the very least to keep, you know, corporate interests out, you know, because these places exist and their stock and trade is their uniqueness and the fact that they have this certain kind of, you know, authentic vibe and authentic quality, right?
This story, this one is different, though. This house really leans into the fact that it is a spite house. It's 54 feet long, it's 20 feet tall, and if you look at the front door, there's stained glass above the door, and in the stained glass, it literally says Spite House. They're on the corner of, what is it, Christ and Broadway? Is that how you would say it, Christ?
I think that's right. I don't imagine that it's pronounced Christ, but haven't actually heard anybody speak it. But boy, do I love that. First of all, I love a good stained glass. I may have mentioned that my partner is a stained glass artist. So I'm a huge fan of the craft. A lot goes into it. I've learned more about it than I ever cared to know since we've been together. But I just adore the fact that they just went right to the most direct thing possible in saying Spite House in a beautiful piece of stained glass art.
Yeah, and if you look at this, if you look into this story, you'll see that it really begins in 1908 with a man named Charles Froling. We know that to be true, but very quickly the origins of the Spite House faded into myth and legend. And so you'll hear at times contradictory stories about how this thing came to be. We'll get the main one out of the way. The most popular one says that our pal Charlie built the house as a means of revenge against the city of Alameda. They used eminent domain to create this street, Christ Street. And when they did this, they removed a lot of his property. So eminent domain, for anybody unfamiliar, is this concept that a municipality or a government can say, for the greater good, we are taking your private property. We're going to pay you what we feel is fair, but you cannot refuse to sell it to us. And we hear about this mostly in the U.S. when it comes to things like widening roads, like making a two-lane road a four-lane road and so on.
That's right. And the neighbor in this case wasn't really feeling this situation at all. He, in fact, was quite unsympathetic, actually, to the situation, as was written in the San Francisco Gate article on the subject by Jordan Gwynn. Unsympathetic to the point of spite, actually, you know? So in another situation of trying to block the light out of somebody's domicile, he set about building a home adjacent to the property that would block the sunlight from entering the northeast side of this Victorian home.
Yeah, so basically the city made his original home building plans impossible, and his neighbor was kind of rude to him about it. So he said, okay, new plan. I'm going to screw over your house. But people who look into this actually don't believe this most common story.
We see a lot of this in these spite tales, right? Where there's like conflicting narratives or just nameless brothers, you know?
Yeah. So we found one historian mentioned in the San Francisco newspaper you cited just a second ago, who says first, Christ Street already existed. And the city of Alameda actually didn't seize any of Charlie's land. Instead, this spite house may go back to a good old case of old-fashioned sibling rivalry. That's right. We're doing a callback to our earlier episode, Brother Against Brother.
Love it. Or you hate to see it, but also usually makes for some interesting drama. So in this version of the tale, once again, couple of brothers, you know, brothers related to one another.
It keeps reminding me of that interdimensional cable episode from Rick and Morty.
For sure.
Two brothers in a van, and then a meteor comes, and they run from giant cat monsters and two brothers, meteor stuff, and another. And then there's giant cat ladies, and there's an armada of tomato-wielding things. And then, you wouldn't know this, but the brothers, they're just normal brothers.
Well, yeah.
I'm shooting about 70% accurate right now.
All this to say that, you know, a pair of brothers feuding or just going on an adventure is a good starting place for any story, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
is that what the takeaway is here?
So that's our takeaway.
I think so. So in this version of the tale, a pair of nameless brothers, once again, inherited this lot. And a very similar callback to the previous story. One of them sold most of the land while his sibling was out of town, not necessarily at war, just out on a little excursion, you know?
Gone fishing.
Yeah, who knows? And of course, this led to the other brother feeling wronged in some that's pretty messed up. It's not nice to sell your co-property out from under, you know, one of the other co-owners.
Yeah. And one thing that's funny to me about this is when I hear these bro v bro stories, it always makes me very, very thankful that all of my friends who do have siblings actually seem to get on with each other pretty well, you know, like Max and Alex Williams. No, save your kumasi kamasa hands there. Save your middling hand wave there, Max. You and Alex actually get along quite well, at least when company's over.
Well, look, Max, mileage may vary in terms of your interpretation, but I will side with Ben and say that observationally speaking, y'all are some of the most amicable siblings that I've ever encountered. So take that it's worth.
We're basically the exact same age. I mean, we're 18 months apart and we get along very well. I mean, we've now worked at two jobs together. We have lived together in college, and then we lived six houses apart from each other for 3 years.
And you taught me to play dice.
Yes.
Same.
Alex always calls me the rule master. I think it's because I'm like mega neurotic and very organized in every aspect of my life.
I learned how to play dice from the two of you as well. And I can attest that you are the rule master, at least in, what was it? 1-4-24, I think was the game that we liked to play.
Oh yeah. 1-4-24 is the best.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I think that's when we were playing, Ben.
Probably so. It's a go-to. It's classic. It's good fun to, you know, make it interesting, you know, wager a few shekels in there and it's a lot of fun. But yeah. Unless I'm mistaken, though, Max, neither one of you have either sold a parcel of land out from under the other.
No, not yet. And to be completely honest, if one of us was going to be the villain brother, it would probably be me.
It just seems so. It seems like the kind of move you wouldn't even do to a non-related colleague. You know, if you are in the same boat together, you know what gets me about these stories. And beat me here, Max. What gets me about these stories is the real fuck you-itness about it. It's not just selling the land or building on the land. It's that you're selling most of it and leaving the dregs.
The dregs.
That's like giving someone a partially used Starbucks gift card for their birthday and saying, I know it says $20 on there, but I think there's about $4 left. I thought of you, bro.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It seems purposely hurtful.
It's a little different, but it does remind me of the Macy's story with the weird little corner that was barely right. useful, but still useful in this kind of like weird, spiteful flex situation. But this is not that. This is the reverse of that, because this is someone who is purposefully leaving that amount to the other, whether purposefully or just absentmindedly, perhaps, and just thoughtlessly, right?
Yeah. And
why not sell the whole thing? Was he really thinking this would be cool? He'll be fine with this? Like, what is this, his consolation prize? Like, ugh.
So this house, it actually does. It reminds me of houses. I said this previously in part one. It reminds me of some houses you might see in other countries, right? It's built into a awkward, small amount of space. I think it's 12 feet wide at its most broadest point. And we still don't know a ton of facts about it because of the time in which it was constructed. But thank goodness, historians have done some pretty serious digging here, and they learned some strange things.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
One unfortunate fact they learned is that Charles Froehling's neighbor, one Annette Westerdahl actually died a few weeks before the Spite House was completely built. And it appears, unfortunately, that she may have taken her own life. Mm. One neighbor said that before she passed away, she was worried the erection of this two-story dwelling would shut out the sunlight from a part of her house. And that was quoted in, what, the San Francisco Chronicle back in 08? 1908.
Yes, 19, yeah, back in 08. Right. Yeah, 1908, that is, for sure. And this unfortunate death did lead to some, some whispers on the street, whispers in the front yard. I heard about nights out in the schoolyard. Sorry, back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Better than Ezra, right? The idea of these other properties were haunted, that both of these homes were haunted. And actually, there was some evidence that exorcisms took place in the 70s. 1970s, yes.
Right. I don't know if we need that last one, but yeah. And at this point, the people who have resided...
I was the Gin Blossoms. Sorry, not Better Than Ezra.
Gin Blossoms. Well, they were very much of the era. Better Than Ezra. What they have? King of New Orleans?
That was also...
Desperately Wanted.
Desperately Wanted. I
run into the wet grass, falling a step behind. Who is Ezra? Why is it so important?
He's apparently less than. He's deficient in some way.
Right. Dear Ridiculous Historians, we know we could solve this very quickly if we just typed it into a search engine, but we're having fun.
I have a sense that it's a biblical reference. What do you think?
I feel like I read about it one time, the last time I was in a 90s rabbit hole, but whatever the answer was didn't really stick with me. I'm sure it's out there, though. And they're still around, right?
Actually, yeah, they are. I just found an article that said Better Than Ezra frontman won't divulge the secret behind the band's name.
So
the mystery remains.
He's like Tom York with that lip syncing in that one music video, remember?
I don't know if I do, but
there's a Radiohead video where one of the actors in the film is saying, it's like a short film, of course.
Oh, he can open his mouth.
Yeah, and he talks, and the mainstream doesn't know what he's saying.
Gotcha. Anyway. Well, just really quickly, and then I swear to God, we're going to move on. There is also a really great clip of Tom York being asked, like in the 90s, what Creep is about. And he goes, Creep is about... No, it's gone.
Fantastic. I love when he trolls people in interviews.
And all the while Johnny Greenwood just standing there catatonic. Like, the man never says a word. And it was also an ageless vampire, by the way.
And there's also, the thing is, Tom York has a bit of a Tom Waits-esque or a Bob Dylan-esque approach to interviews.
Agreed.
Oh, gosh, I love it. Anyway, so these guys probably would be into Spite architecture as just a thing in addition to music.
You always quote Waits as what's he building in there. That makes me think
I love that one.
It's a Spite house. That's what he's building in there.
That's what he's building. We found the answer. Well done, man. I like that one. So the people who live in the Alameda Spite House have never themselves encountered paranormal activity, but we do know that at one point, a single person owned both the Spite House and a Victorian house next door, and this guy threw parties at the Spite House and turned the lower level into a bar. We know the house was abandoned at one point. It became derelict, and it was almost torn down completely, but the public got together and they said, save the Spite House, save the Spite House, or something akin to that.
Earlier in the episode, I think it was in this part, or maybe it was in the last one, you said something about how the house was made of spite. And I just love the idea of spite as like a building material. I want to know what it's graded for. Can it be load bearing? You know, like it's just, I don't know. My mind ran wild when you said that.
The house that Spite built. Yeah, that does sound somewhat poetic. We could do a Ridiculous History Studios on that one.
I got no problem with this.
Nice. And so you can read again in that excellent article that you cited, Noel. Folks, you can read about the day-to-day life of the family that lives there now. They are living there by choice, not because they were driven to it by privation or danger. But that is one example of something that ended well, overall. Now you're living in a little bit of history. There's no bad blood. It's not haunted. It's also not the last example of a spike house. This one's confusing to me. The Montlake Pie House?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, it sounds like fun.
Sounds like a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
I want to go to the Pie House.
Well, have you ever seen that show Pushing Daisies? It didn't run that long, but it was really
criminally
cool.
Underrated.
Dr. Seussian, I believe that the creator went on to do Hannibal, which is also amazing and
beautiful.
Not like that show at all. Pushing Daisy was very colorful, and I mean, so is Hannibal, but it had some death qualities where people could be like brought back to life. But it revolved around a pie shop called the Pie Hole that I believe was shaped like a pie, if I'm not mistaken, like in the show. It had like, you know, and when I think about things like that, I think about Pizza Hut and how like early in the branding of Pizza Hut, they decided they were going to have a unique design to all of their buildings. And then when, you know, time rendered that sort of dated and the company pivoted and rebranded, you have all these weird Pizza Huts, former Pizza Huts, just scattered
everywhere,
hither and yon, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's obviously that weird hat-shaped red roof situation.
Yeah.
So that's what I think of when I think of a pie house, but maybe I'm wrong here.
No, you're making sense. I mean, if you look at it, it simply looks like a door, like as though someone built a door frame and they just kept going into the back. It is only 55 inches across at its narrowest point. And it is a pie-shaped house that was apparently built entirely to cut off a larger home from the street. It reminds me of the geography of Croatia and Serbia. You know what I'm talking about? Like, how have you guys seen that? Hang on. Wait, I want to show you this.
I see. It's shaped like a slice of pie.
Like a slice of pie, not like a full piece
Got
of pie.
Got it. See, I was confused there for a second, but I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's almost like it disappears off into the horizon. Like the walls get narrower as you continue to walk. It could be used as like some sort of weird, you know, labyrinth kind of tactic where if you're like going, you eventually get crushed to death by the walls or something like that. But this is a little more lighthearted than that.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to amend what I was saying earlier there. That was my fault, guys. I said Serbia. I meant Bosnia and Herzegovina. Let me share this with you. I promise it'll be worth it. This is an example of what I think we could call spite geography. Can you see that?
That little bit at the bottom there.
Can you describe it?
It's the dregs. I mean, once again, it's just like it's such a tiny crumb of land as to be absolutely useless.
Right. It's just to block them from having access to the water. We talked about this in a different country, different part of the world, but it's the exact same thing in the War Over Bird Poop episode. It's one of the South American countries have this tiny little stretch of land that blocks an entire other one from having any access to the water.
So spite is not just for houses, but I had to bring up that slight discursion because that reminds me of what's happening with Pie House, and you described it perfectly. Here's another local legend. Again, the sources on all this stuff aren't super great. So this neighbor goes to the owner of the land to purchase a plot of land in 1925, but offers a price so low that the owner is insulted. And they're so insulted that they build this house that's basically a slice of pie just to get back at the person. That's one story, but there's another story as well, right?
That's right. The other account claims the house was built when the wife of the owner was given this tiny lot in a divorce settlement. Again, like this sort of paltry, kind of barely useful piece of land. And once again, it's like a kind of fighting over a piece of land where someone gets the dregs while her ex supposedly got the rest of the property. And someone who's actually owned the property recently said that the profile of the house wasn't really that big a deal, except when it came to cooking, because of the, just the logistics of the space where all the kitchen hookups were.
Oh, yeah. She said she had to, when she opened the oven door, she had to stand to one side so she didn't get pinned against the wall.
Yeah.
And, that seems kind of inconvenient.
Unless you think, this type of shape would maybe render a house like this less valuable. Not the case. It actually quite recently sold for $400,000.
Holy smokes. What is this, Atlanta?
Yeah, pretty much.
Walk down the street for that one.
Oh, we're there. But the 860 square foot home, you could liken it, and Curbed Seattle does just that. You could liken it to the layout of like a houseboat.
Okay.
Because a houseboat has to taper a little bit, right?
Sure.
I mean, I guess it doesn't. You see square ones or rectangular ones, right? But sometimes, you know, there is a point that they will kind of taper a little bit.
And they're usually rectangular.
That's right.
They're long and narrow by design. So that makes sense. You get all the inconvenience of a houseboat with none of the appeal of living on the water.
That's right. That's true. I would love to, at the very least, Airbnb a houseboat sometime. I think that would be really
so
cool.
They're so cool. Mm-hmm. They are so cool. We should absolutely, you know what? That's how we know when we made it. We should absolutely get houseboats.
Yeah. Or Airbnb one. But that, I'd be cool.
Okay,
man.
Okay, you're right. I'm going all gas.
I love it. No, who needs stuff. The brakes, man? They're overrated. Except if you want to like stop. But that we're not done. And I think, yeah, we've got a good one to close this episode out with. The pretty innocuous and somewhat boringly named, no pie house, the Kavanaugh Building.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man, and funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This just sounds like a place where business is conducted.
Yes. Once upon a time in the 1930s, Karina Kavanaugh was a rich, beautiful, and determined woman. Her family was extremely wealthy, but old money they were not. I don't know why. I instantly went like Disney fable.
There's been some fable aspects to a lot of these. And then I think that was a great way to start. They weren't old money. So this is in, Argentina. So there's, you know, a very installed, entrenched aristocracy there. And folks who come into money later in life, for some reason, are looked down upon. They're considered like the nouveau riche, you know, and that is a term of abuse. And they are not afforded the same kind of, you know, privileges and respect that maybe landed gentry, you know, might be in terms of like legacy family money. For whatever reason, that matters. And old money tends to be suspicious and a little bit guarded when it comes to folks that come into money later in life.
Absolutely. Yeah, because money does not necessarily buy social status. And you nailed it with the description of the so-called nouveau riche. So Karina Kavanaugh, despite being very wealthy, is ostracized by other people at her income level. And she has a romantic liaison, a troubling affair with a young man who is born into a very, very established old money family. He is the son of Mercedes Castellanos de Ancorina. And this old money family, you know, to them, it's like a Romeo and Juliet thing. They hate this relationship. You're dating new money? Have you lost all respect for your heritage? And they use their influence to end the relationship. So Karina Kavanaugh is humiliated. She's hurt. She dedicates herself to vengeance. And being a lady of noble bearing, she decides that she is not going to, you know, show up at the estate with a knife or, you know, run them over with horses or something. 1930s, maybe it would have been a car. Instead, she turns to architecture.
Yeah, the old trusty. Right? The Basilica of the Holy Sacrament is a gorgeous historical church that is now available, you know, for the public to tour and to check out. But in its original days, it was a private mausoleum of a very wealthy family, the Ancorinas, who lived in the San Martin Plaza in a mansion that is now the site of the Argentine Foreign Ministry.
Yeah. And the deal is that is not close enough for the old money Ancorina family, especially the matriarch of the family. And she says, you know what? We need to be closer to the basilica. So I am going to buy a vacant lot directly in front of the basilica. We'll build our new family mansion there. It'll be so convenient for us to attend services and whatnot. And so Karina Kavanaugh, picture her listening in the shadows. And she says, I'm going to foil their plans. I will take my revenge. So just like a brother in the Civil War or something, she waits for the matriarch, Mercedes, to go on vacation. And then she goes to the person who owns the land. She doubles the offer of the real estate and snatches up that land. Boom, boom, boom. And then, while the Ancorina family is still on vacation, Karina contacts these very famous architects, Sanchez, Lagos, and De La Torre, and says, I need you to build a huge building. And they say, how huge? And she says, enormous. And they say, why? And she says, entirely to obstruct the view of the church from as many angles as possible.
First of all, I would have said, it's none of your business. Take my money. Second of all, right. A lot of mischief going down while people are out of town in these stories. You know, a lot of people swooping in and buying land out from under people and using it for nefarious purposes. And so the construction commences. And she really, you know, as John Hammond would say, spared no expense. Also, as the Argentina traveler would say, she did this at great expense to herself and her own wealth. See, this is where the spite becomes interesting. When it starts to, like, you're so pissed off. You're doing this thing just to inconvenience somebody else. And you're doing it, like, at cost to your, like, you're getting rid of your own assets. She had to sell three of her own properties in Venada Tuerto in order to finance the project. I believe the expression is cutting off your nose to spite your neighbor or your face. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. No, close enough.
What's an instancias? Is that just like estancias? Is that like a type of villa?
It can be a couple things. Yeah. It can be like a ranch. Okay. I think they're using it to mean ranch in this situation. But the direct translation is instances. So it's definitely not instances.
No. I see the cattle ranch in Latin America. Yeah. So it is a specific type of industry. So, like seriously, she's selling off something that will make her money long term in order to finance this project just to get back at somebody. That's why I think this is honestly the most kind of self-destructive case of spite architecture that we've run into in this series. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm tempted to agree with you there. You know, she goes hard on the paint. It takes 14 months to build the Kavanaugh building. That's a record-breaking construction period, super fast. And the building itself broke multiple records. It was the tallest reinforced concrete structure in the world. And for many, many years after, it was also the tallest building in all of Latin America. It also became the first building in the country of Argentina to have a central AC system. And it looked like it was, of the time in the zeitgeist, it was echoing the rationalist style that was very popular during its construction. But mainly it was doing that style so that the architects could get around building codes that otherwise would have limited its size. This is unhinged. The story of this building. And if you look at it now, it's huge. It's a big, big piece of room. It's a big monument to revenge.
It absolutely is. I guess this wraps up the story, but speaking of revenge, and I'm pretty sure that you're a fan of this this guy's work, I've been revisiting the films, or visiting for the first time, a handful, the films of Park Chan-wook, the the incredible Korean director who has a revenge trilogy, of which Old Boy is the second one, I think. The first one is Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, then Old Boy, which probably is his most famous film, and then Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
I
recently watched his film called The Handmaiden, which is incredible, and also Thirst, which is like a vampire story that he did where vampirism is treated more like a disease that you can kind of catch from like a blood transfusion.
I really like that one.
Liked it a lot too, and had never seen it, and he's got a couple others that I've slept on. One that's like a kind of a romantic comedy called like I'm a Cyborg and That's Okay, or I'm an Android and That's Okay. But yeah, I mean, the revenge trilogy, definitely not architecture-based. Pure, gnarly-ass, the most elaborate type of revenge you can imagine-based. But if you're into that kind of stuff or want to just dip your toe in kind of Korean cinema, highly recommend his work.
Old Boy's been showing up in a lot of memes recently as not the best choice for a first date. Which it isn't, but it does have a beautiful architecture plot. It is not for children. It is intensely disturbing, and you must, I try not to be an absolutist, fellow ridiculous historians, but you must watch the original Korean versions.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, big love to Spike Lee, but that movie did not need to be remade.
Right, right. And, you know, you get in situations, maybe you had to make it, but while they both, I'm sure, have their benefits and have their unique draws, the original film is the best. Have you seen, speaking of creepy stuff, and this is a little more in the horror film era, but you saw Tale of Two Sisters, right?
Absolutely. It's not streaming anywhere. And I realized I wanted to show it to my friend who was visiting, and I realized that I had a copy of it on DVD. Thankfully, I found it. Yeah, that's a good one too. I really got into that whole cinematic universe in a big, big way. I think a lot of people did, but remember back when, you know, probably we both first discovered it, like you couldn't get them on DVD. You had to like get pirated versions, and then thank God for Tartan Asia Extreme. You know, that was like a DVD imprint that all of a sudden realized that these were going to be huge in the DVD market and put them out. And as far as a podcast recommendation too for this kind of stuff, I think you'd dig these guys as well, Ben, if you haven't already heard of it. It's called Blank Check with Griffin and David's. Griffin, I forget his last name. Griffin Newman, I think. He plays Arthur in the live action The Tick TV series, but it's him and his buddy who's a writer for like a film critic. And they talk about like the films of directors that were kind of like their blank check after having a successful run of films, and then the one that was just their batshit pie in the sky project. But they're in the midst of a full Park Chan-wook retrospective. I think the most recent one is Thirst, actually. So.
Oh, co-host the Atlantic film critic David Sims.
That's right.
I see.
Yep. Good pod.
And speaking of good pods, hopefully, knock on wood, thank you for tuning in here to Ridiculous History. We want to, as always, end with some thanks. Big, big thanks to Mr. Max Williams, our super producer. And of course, big, big thanks to Alex Williams, both for composing this amazing soundtrack you hear at the beginning and end of every show, and for also not pulling the rug out from under Max when Max went to the Civil War.
Oh, and by the way, I was doing some research during the episode, and turns out the plot of land that's equidistant between both y'all's residents, not that expensive, so I've already bought it, and get ready for a giant, ugly thing to appear, which you both, neither of which we'll be able to see.
But Max, you're failing to mention that Ben and I don't really live that close to each other, so this place, neither of us will probably ever encounter
it. I mentioned it right there at the end, but you know what? When you guys go between each other's places, you'll drive by and you're like, oh yeah, that's that ridiculously large thing that Max spent a bunch of money on.
We could probably find another route. And I'll love it too.
I love attention, man. Do not
underestimate
that.
It's just
going to
be a giant me giving you a thumbs down.
That's fine. I'm used to it. I'm glad you've immortalized it. I support you. Can I, like, do you have a Kickstarter? Because I am in.
I probably need one now. I basically spent every dime I have. And I'm only 5% of the way there.
Like we spent on that grandfather clock that we barely ever use, except when Jonathan Strickland, aka the Quiz,
insurance that
up.
We pay on that thing is ridiculous.
Who knew? Who knew clock insurance was so heinous?
A lot of moving parts, you know.
right.
But indeed, thank you to the whole team responsible for maintaining and ensuring that incredible piece of kit that we rely on about once a year.
Thanks also to Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit. Thanks to Gabe Luzier. Thanks to Yves Jeffcoat, all of whom have their own projects afoot.
Huge thanks to Jonathan Strickland, the Quizster. We got to get him to come back now that he knows where we are, you know, when we're in the office together, and make use of that. Maybe we can get our use of the grandfather clock up to, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. Seems like a worthwhile use of such an intense investment.
Sure. Just like spider architecture.
Exactly. Thanks again to you, Ben. These were great.
And thanks to you, Noel.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.